welcome one and all once again to Duos in episode 134. We're coming off of GDC this week, so we have a bit of news to talk about. But before we get this, introduce our panel of free-to-players. We have Martin.
Hello.
We have Daniel.
Hello.
And we have Jason.
How's it going?
Okay, so yes, as we do every week, we're going to kick it off with what you've been playing. And I think we're going to kick it off with Martin, because you have been playing Infamous Second Son, correct?
Me too.
I played
Infamous Second Son and Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes.
What about Luftrausers?
If it wasn't for this recording, I'd be playing right now.
So, I guess, let's kick it off with Ground Zeroes, because I assume that's going to be the more negative discussion, based on your Twitter feed.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, the thing is, I didn't buy it myself. I got it as a gift. And after I finished it, I still felt ripped off. It's probably the poorest excuse of a retail game I've ever seen.
Well, it's only $30.
Yeah. And
it's not
even
really
that
a retail
way
game.
Too much. The thing is, I finished the main mission in 90 minutes. Then the side missions each are probably around 15 minutes at most. One was, I think, even a bit shorter than that. So I guess in 2.5 hours to 3 hours, I finished the whole thing. That is really not good value, especially not if at least two of those side ops, which, by the way, of course, take place in the same camp, are kind of bad. The bonus mission you get on PS4 called Deja Vu, where you basically have to recreate scenes from the original Metal Gear Solid, is really bad. That sounds more exciting than it actually is in concept, because it just entails to, oh, there's a hind on this helipad with two guys. You just sneak up to it, so you are kind of close to that scene, and then a small cutscene happens. That's it. And that's basically with all the recreation. You just find something in the environment. And the other side ops that was really bad, I forgot what it was called, but it basically is just a turret section. You are at the side of your helicopter and you shoot out of it, protecting someone. That's not interesting at all, especially not for a Metal Gear game. So, all in all, I would say the main mission is worth playing, and three of the side ops. And even the main mission, you finish it, then a cutscene happens at the end, and I'm like, this is totally cool! Why are you not letting me play this? Which is right now happening. I don't want to say anything just
that
in case.
That totally sounds like Metal Gear to me. At least my experience with the franchise.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's made in a way that would easily be playable. Not that it's something that is like out of the ordinary from the already established gameplay in the main mission. So that was really weird, and story-wise, it's also, I don't think it's a great primer for Phantom Pain, because it's all just based off Peace Walker, and if you haven't played Peace Walker, you have no clue what the fuck is going on.
Does it eat into Phantom Pain in any fashion? Like, is it like a to-be-continue?
The ending basically is like a small thing that kind of leads into Phantom Pain, but it's so insignificant that it could have been like just this cutscene at the beginning of Phantom Pain, and that would have been it. The other thing is, well, the basic gameplay that we present here with now how Snake controls, what possibilities you have, how you can interact with the environment, and get yourself on. The game really works great as a stealth game. And they even have like this focus mode, which if you are being seen, the game slows down. You can quickly try to take out the guy who saw you so that the alarm doesn't go off. so it's kind of easier for people who are not as good at stealth games. All the stuff works really good, it's really polished, the game looks great, runs great at 60 frames per second. So all that stuff is great, it's just that the content part, it's just not there, not even for 30 bucks, or in my case, in Germany it costs 30 euro. I don't think that's a fair price at all, especially not compared to like similar experiments with like Case Zero, which I think was like 4 or 5 hours, and that was $5. I don't know.
It also came out much closer to release. It was like a summer to fall thing.
Yeah.
This is like a year.
Yeah. I think this would have been fine at like $10 to $15. And then it would have been great value, but not like this. And some people I already know, like, complaining, well, you can collect all this stuff, and then you can S-rank every mission, and then the game is like 15 hours.
Yeah,
but who does
about
that?
Any game.
Yeah, exactly, and who does that, actually? That means, like, a game like, I don't know, Vanquish has, like, 50 hours playtime, if we go by that metric. That's, like, ridiculous.
I'm also kind of curious because it doesn't have a Platinum Trophy, which means that Trophy Hunters can't repay it until they get
it
the
doesn't.
Platinum.
I don't even think it has Gold Trophy, if I remember correctly.
Oh, wow.
I think it's only Bronze and Silver ones, if I'm not mistaken. I would have to look right now. Maybe the Get All Missions with an S ranking is Gold, but that might be it. Value proposition, terrible. Gameplay, actually great. And at least that makes me excited for Phantom Pain, because we can assume that's not going to be as liked on content. And if they even expand on the gameplay, which we have already seen with the horse stuff, that's potentially really exciting. But otherwise, no. Stay the fuck away. wait for sale or for used copies to show up for really cheap in a month.
Well, here's what I said to my housemate, because he said, oh, I don't think I'll be getting that, and he's really into Metal Gear. I said, just wait until the Phantom Pain comes out, because you're going to have to wait that long anyway. Yeah. Wait until the Phantom Pain comes out, and then you'd buy Ground Zeroes with it, and it'd be cheap then. It'd be like 10 quid, and it'd be worth the money.
It will probably be 10 quid in a month or two, to be honest. And the other thing is, and the other thing about Ground Zeroes is, by the time Phantom Pain comes out, I expect Ground Zeroes to probably have been free on PlayStation Plus by then, because it would be a great promotion for that new game. Just saying. So yeah, not that great. Maybe move on to Infamous, which is actually a really good game.
Yes, let's move on to Infamous. Apparently.
Infamous Second Son is really good. It's not gameplay wise. I don't think it's changing things up much from the second game, I would say. I think
what about
I like
the powers. The powers are all different, aren't they? I barely played one or two. So
but like how it basically functions and how the mission structures and stuff like that. I don't think that changes up that much.
Out of power, still kind of a third-person shooter.
Yeah, of course.
That's the part I don't like still.
I didn't mind it. I actually worked out pretty fine for me, because I really liked the neon power, which was really focusing on the shooting. And since I played through the game in as the good guy, that power had like some neat extras if you have good karma. Like you could incapacitate people by just shooting at their legs. And when you go into aiming, time actually slows down, which makes it even easier. So you could take out the smaller guys really quickly and stuff like that. So all that is pretty clever, I think. Also, the game is just beautiful.
It is. I've seen it, and I'm like, whoa.
It looks really, really good. And it also performs really good, I think. Which I was quite surprised with, that the performance holds up this well. The city is actually bigger than I expected, I have to say. The previous games didn't feel as big, I think. One thing that I really noticed was that the traversal really changed quite a bit. Because previously you had like the hover ability, which you still have, and you could glide on like electricity stuff to get around faster. But there still was quite a bit of climbing of you required in the previous titles. I mean, in the second one, they kind of changed it up with giving you abilities that let you jump higher, but there was still quite a bit of climbing. The climbing is still in here, but it kind of became irrelevant. I mean, I rarely used my climbing abilities because as soon as you get your neon power, you can basically just run up buildings. So, really, what's the point of climbing? Yeah, it is actually awesome. It makes the whole game traversal way quicker and easier. And so it's not really a shame that the climbing is missing. It's actually kind of benefiting the game, I think.
Yeah, I don't have the neon power yet, and I hate the climbing. Because it's not like... it's not like Assassin's Creed or Uncharted where you can actually do that much with climbing. You can grab like one ledge. You can't scale a building or anything. So in the early part of the game where I am, it's a little bit frustrating. But
you get the neon power really early. It's like, I think the fourth or fifth main mission, I think. It's super early. In like the first 2 hours you have it, usually. If you don't do side stuff. The one thing there are two things that kind of disappointed me, and maybe Jason could say, I don't know how much he dabbled with it, is I think the side missions could have required a bit more variety, I think. Because there's not that much there, except like, hey, destroy these enemy camps and get rid of these cameras and find these shards. Don't get me wrong, it's fun, but I think a bit more variety would have been nice, I think. I don't know, Jason, how you feel about it at this point?
I haven't even really... I've done a few of those things, but it does seem like it's a little bit of a like collectathon, I guess.
I actually 100% of the game on my playthrough collecting all the stuff, but the collecting part is actually kind of fun in like the Crackdown way. But unlike Crackdown, you actually see the things on the map, which is always nice. So you just have to figure out how to get to them and stuff like that.
Yeah, and it fits the world too, like, you know, the DUP is like trying to get after you, so it makes sense you're trying to take out all the cameras and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's not like they are not well integrated, but more variety would have been nice. I could think at least of a few concepts that would have worked pretty well, but apparently they didn't went there. The other thing for me is I was pretty disappointed in the story. I think it's pretty pedestrian. It starts in a pretty well-known way. The story has the beats you expect, and it kind of ends the way you expect it to. And that's really disappointing, especially after the second game, which went way more in the crazy comic book superhero direction than the first game did, which I actually liked.
And I played the first game, and I remember that story being pretty... Except for the twist at the end about who the main bad guy was, I thought that was pretty by the books as well. So I didn't know the second one improved the story that much.
Yeah, it gets way more comic booky in the second one, and crazy stuff with time travel and stuff like that. And this one reins it all back in and kind of makes the story just be there. I mean, the characters are kind of fun at times, they're interesting. But the main story itself is a bit disappointing, to be honest. But the gameplay is just really fun. And I think they did really well this early on in this generation, I have to say.
But it's not a next-gen gameplay, right?
No, not really. Like I said, it's still very similar to the previous
time. I was just poking fun at people who got upset with that phrase that was used for reviews.
I don't know, but I think it's a dumb phrase, because what is at this point?
I think
point?
It's dumb, too. Yeah, what is this? It's such a nebulous concept.
I don't think it's dumb. I get the concept behind it. I think it's an odd criticism.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a... I was just poking fun at that. We're not going to go into that discussion this week or ever.
Yeah.
Hopefully we don't ever, because...
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Jason, if you want to say still something about the game, just do. Otherwise, I will probably get up and look around.
I mean, I'm kind of coming from the perspective where I didn't play very much of the first two games at all. I just, they never really interested me that much. But, you know, being kind of in the early cycle of the PS4, there's not much else to play. So I picked this up and... I mean, you hit all the points. Like, obviously, like I said, I'm really early, but it's gorgeous. It definitely looks like a worthy next gen game. In the beginning, I kind of felt like I was gonna hate the main character, Delson. Like, he just seemed like an annoying, you know, like rebellious teenager type. But
oh yeah,
as stuff starts happening to him, his character becomes a little bit more interesting. I'm playing down the good karma path right now. I don't know. Overall, I kind of have, from the little I have played of the first two Infamouses, it's the same general things I didn't like. Like, I don't like the kind of that you just, like, shoot fireballs out of your hand. It doesn't feel good, and it takes a bunch to take down any of the enemies. I just don't find it very satisfying. And I don't have the neon traversal ability, so all the jumping and everything, all the movement feels very floaty. That sounds like that gets better as I upgrade. But the powers look really cool. I'm really excited to see, like, you know, how that's the gameplay all evolves and stuff.
Also, the shooting also improves once you can improve your power. Even, like, the smoke ability you have at the beginning. Basically, you can just shoot at the start. But then you can get, like, upgrades that if you do headshots with smoking ability, you can basically take guys out pretty much immediately because they get, like, congested, stuff like that, from the smoke. Even that improves further down, and you get, like, basically rockets to shoot and stuff like that.
Quick question. I know Jason mentioned this, and I'm really kind of curious. Has the binary choices improved? Because I remember the first game.
No.
Okay. It used to be really awful.
That's by design. They said that. It's by design.
I figured as much, but it was so terrible. It's like, save this puppy or kill all these people. It's not really even-handed here.
The very first choice in your game is, like, hand yourself over or sell out your tribe. So, that answer enough?
Yeah, I guess not.
But on the other hand, Earl, you have to say it like this. It's more fun for a second playthrough, which I'm going through right now, because the choices are so different. It's like, okay, now I'm going to do my good playthrough, and if I'm still want to play more, I'm doing my bad playthrough, and at least it feels quite different.
Yeah, that was one thing where normally with these games that have kind of a good evil dynamic, I don't min max it. I like to try to play it, take each decision on its own. But that's almost impossible to do with Infamous. Yeah. I've already discovered, like, it's pretty much going to be like straight good, and then straight bad is going to be its own game, so to speak.
Yeah, and they even like kind of tailored some of the powers to more fit with one karma way or the other. For example, if you like now go into good karma, you will, for example, get way more use out of the neon power because it has way more upgrades if you have good karma, for example. And if you go evil, you most likely will have spent more points into your melee stuff because you get way more possibilities in melee combat, and also with the smoke powers, basically can do some very evil things.
Okay. Have you been playing anything else, Jason?
I've been dabbling a bit with Rayman Legends.
Oh, nice.
It's, first of all, gorgeous. Oh, my God. 1080p on PS4, and it just, I mean, that art style is just incredible. And the gameplay is, I didn't play Origins, but it's a very, very solid 2D platformer. And I was surprised that it ratchets up the difficulty pretty quickly. I mean, you're pretty much one hit and you're dead until you start picking up like hearts or whatever. But I'm also really early in that, but it's really cool so far. And like I said, just gorgeous. And then I've just been playing this browser game 2048, which is basically it's a take on Threes, but with like even numbers.
I have played, a meta 2048, which is 2048, but you play it with 20 games of 2048. It's getting ridiculous. At least there's like that stupid dog Shibu Inu meme one. There's the 3-1. There's an 8-1. There's the 2048, and you have to combine them all together. It's really weird.
Oh my god.
Yeah, because that's how many goddamn clones of that game there are now.
Yeah.
I can see why any people play it though, because it's kind of addictive.
I'm playing it right now.
Yeah. Threes is really good though. I play a lot of Threes.
Threes is cool.
I was about to say I play Threes on my mobile phone, and I play 2048 when Jason sent that to me. I get addicted to really simple games like this. It's so easy to pick up and play anytime you want.
It's simple concept, but kind of genius in its simplicity.
Yeah.
So that's why it works so well.
That's really how the best mobile games work. I mean, it's the same thing with Candy Crush and even Flappy Birds, even though that was cheating because it had poor gameplay. That huge hit. But I'm not getting into that. What about you, Daniel? What have you been playing?
I haven't been playing a whole lot. I finished Virtue's Last Reward. I'm kind of upset that Zero Escape 3 is not happening for the time being now, because I want to see how it all sort of wraps up. I bought Luftrausers just before it was due to come out, and I am so glad I did, because that game is so good. Basically, it's a Vlambeer game, and if you don't know what that means, then that means the game is automatically fantastic. And if you still want to know more about the game, it's kind of like a side-scrolling shmup, but instead of having just you move your plane and you shoot things that come out the side or come from behind or come from the top, you have the control scheme is very unique. You have a thruster, and if you want to go, you have to use your thruster, and it also means that if you want to turn around, you can turn while thrusting, but the most efficient way of doing it is to stop thrusting, stall your plane, and then turn, then start thrusting again. Now, what this means is you can pull off some really cool stunts, and you're just this little brown plane, but it feels so good to play. It feels like you're actually properly dogfighting, and it's just so good. And there's not a whole lot of complexity to it. You know, you shoot things, when you shoot things, things explode, and you survive for as long as you can and get the most points and get the most multiplier. But I think the genius of it is that it doesn't even matter if you're good at these kind of games or not, because the plane, it's split up into sort of three different parts. You get a gun, and you can get like a normal machine gun, or you get a spread shot, or you get a laser beam, or you get like, my favorite is it shoots a big like bomb, and when it hits something, it then spreads into loads of little bombs and does loads of damage that way. And you can combine that with a chassis which has, they usually have their own unique properties, like there's one that's good for, it doesn't take any damage when you hit a plane, because hitting a plane is a good way of killing them in this game. One chassis, it doesn't take any damage when you hit a plane, and it's better at hitting planes than every other chassis, which is really cool. And you also get different kinds of thrusters. So there's ones that are good for going straight and not turning. There's one that basically allows you to stay on the water, and you can shoot up from underwater and kill things that way. There's one that shoots when you fire it, when you use it. So there's something here for everybody. You just need to sort of mix and match your plane and find something that's good for you. My favorite, it has the cannon. It has the tougher chassis, which takes more hits, and it has the standard engine, so I can destroy those goddamn annoying battleships because they just spam bullets, and the cannon is great for taking them out. Three hits, and that's it, they're gone.
So you ever say, I thank your battleship?
No, unfortunately.
Actually, I wanted to say, like, when you explained how the flying works, I wanted to say that it's kind of similar to how Time Pilot plays, if anyone knows this old arcade game. But in Time Pilot, you always had thrust on. So imagine Time Pilot if the game didn't have thrust all the time. You controlled the thrust yourself. Which I think is pretty good comparison to this game. But Lufros also adds, like Daniel said, the whole water component with ships that also attack. For me, my favorite thing is, of course, also like how you can create your own rouser and fly around and kill stuff every way you like. For example, for me, I am using the spread shot, which is basically like shotgun. And the great thing about that is it has knockback. So when you're in the air and don't use your thrust, you slowly fall down. But if you use your shotgun the right way, you can basically use your shotgun, shoot at enemies, and still strafe around or stay in the air when you're shooting at boats in the water and stuff like that. So that's also pretty fun. And you can find all kinds of different tactics depending on how you equip your vehicle. So I thought that's pretty cool. And yeah, it's a really quick game, of course, to play, and it really feels like this is a modern arcade game. If this came out like late 80s, early 90s, minds would have been blown for people if this game came out. It's just that kind of game.
What platforms is it on?
It's on PC, Mac, and
Linux. PS3 on PlayStation Vita.
Yeah. And it's totally worth the asking price.
Which is...
It is. It's about $10, I think.
I paid €8,
and I paid £6, so I think it's about
so
ten.
About
bucks.
$10, yeah.
Yeah. And it is so good. I don't know. And it's such a simple game. That's the best thing about it. Is there's not a lot to it, but what is there is so well made. It's ridiculous.
You can tell they probably the most time they spent working on this game was fine-tuning it.
Yeah.
Because they worked like 2 years on it. Which is amazing if you think about it.
Okay, anything else?
Not really. No.
Okay, just really quickly, since this is an ancient game, but it's taken me forever, me and my friends finally beat Dead Island this week. It took us, I believe, I checked, it took us 1 year and 13 days to complete the game. because we only play really like once a week, and we kind of have different games we cycle through. This is kind of our big co-op. Everybody has to be there. So, you know, everybody, you know, some of my friends are having kids, some of them are kids. So we've had different weeks where we've been off and stuff like that. So it's taken us 1 year and 13 days in real world time to beat it. It was an enjoyable experience for the most part, except we hit this huge, almost devastating bug near the end of the game, where I've never seen it in an online game before. Like, usually if something screws up, it screws up for one person, but the game somehow screwed up and screwed up for everybody. Like, we all kind of got trapped in this infinite abyss. It froze one of my friend's Xbox. The rest of us couldn't do anything. We were dying without seeing anything on the screen, and like, we couldn't go back. Like, we all got out of the game and tried to go back, and it wouldn't work because it would just take us back to that point, so eventually we just had to go. We just had to cycle through saves until eventually somebody found one we can continue playing the game on. So that was really strange, and it's not a fun experience if that happens near a game that you've been playing for way too long.
On the other hand, that sounds like something that Ireland would do.
Yeah, I've had the bugs.
A reputation for being a buggy mess.
The bugs I've had in Dead Island are so silly to the point where we had a door that would open, instead of like open like a door would, it would turn on a different axis. And I was like, how do you even get this to happen? Like, even by accident? Like, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and I was really happy with that in the sense that I've heard a lot of stories about Dead Island, and we had some various bugs, and even after we finished the game, like, we played the game together. The only time we ever played the game was together. But some of us got credit for beating the game, some of us didn't get credit for beating the game. it was all over the place, but this was, like, the biggest one. I mean, there's been times where we disconnected, or, like, the drive, you know, this time for everything just kips through the environment and all that other stuff, but this was, like, the first major one that just altered progress for, like, 10 minutes for all of us. Because, yeah, I had heard the reputation, but it was $5, and we all needed a co-op game to pay. I mean, eventually we got stuff like Payday 2 and other stuff to fill in the void as well. And the other game, since apparently I've been playing nothing but old games, but this is a old game with a new coat of paint. I tried out Wii Sports Club this weekend because Nintendo's having a free weekend, so you get to play it from Friday until, I guess, Sunday night for free. And it's the first time I've played Wii Sports Tennis with the Wii Motion Plus. I really should keep all this stuff in my head. It really does take a lot of energy, so you didn't realize how much the game helped you out with the first one until you actually have to know how to swing a tennis racket properly. And I've been out of practice a bit. I do like how they set the online, and the fact that you join like a club. Like, I joined a New York club, and then whenever I play online, instead of kind of representing just myself, I represent New York. So, like, that goes into New York's win and loss record as well. And it's kind of, you know, you get compared to other clubs. Like, you can do it state, you can do it the country. As far as I know, and this is a really, well, okay, it's not weird if you think about it as Nintendo, you can't do global competition, so you can't have, like, a United States team versus, like, a European team or something weird like that. I never get these decisions they make. But all in all, I mean, it's Wii Sports. If you've played it before, it's still a ton of fun. They've added a bunch of new mini-games and stuff, and that's really been where I've been focusing on because I really didn't want to do online too much yesterday. And we kind of already mentioned 2048 and 3, so that's pretty much been my week of gaming.
It's weird, just a side note to Wii Sports Club, it's weird that Nintendo is adopting these free weekend stuff and nobody else is apart from Steam, because obviously that's where the whole idea kind of first appears. Because Nintendo's not a company that you kind of associate with doing digital things like this.
Well, I would say that I think they've done a lot of interesting stuff in that field over the past couple of months between how they distributed this game with the, you know, it's only digital, but you get, where every sport they add, you get a free day trial. You get you can either buy a day pass for $2 or you can buy the sport for $10 outright. Stuff like, we don't have it, but we karaoke, that you folks have, where you can buy, instead of buying, you know, karaoke songs, you just buy access to it for a certain amount of time instead of outright buying the game. And I think we mentioned a few weeks back with the baseball game, the Rust Grant, whatever, the baseball game you can haggle with a free-to-play and they'll die for sub-wars. So they've been doing good in that. It's just that it's really hard to see when everything else about their online is kind of iffy. And a lot of people don't want to support their online, especially since it doesn't have a proper account system.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's not like our guys are not doing anything. Although, I don't know about Microsoft, but Sony is, I mean, they're not doing free weekends, but they are at least, they've been doing this thing for a while where you can basically download the whole game and then play it for an hour or two. I'm not quite sure what the time frame is, and then
the
you can decide.
Time trials?
Yeah.
They've done free weekends of Killzone multiplayer.
Oh, right.
So much smaller scale, but yeah.
Yeah, it's a good idea, especially if it helps get people over to these games. I mean, we saw this with a couple of weeks back with Call of Duty Ghost on the Xbox and on the PC, where that, I mean, granted, it's kind of weird to say nobody knows what Call of Duty is, so we'll give them a free weekend. But yeah, you get the idea.
I like the idea of free weekends. Last weekend, Steam had like Formula One 2014 for a weekend game. I played it and I was surprised how much I liked it, and I bought it.
Well, all
Me
you need
too.
To do is look at Steam.
The exact same experience.
All you need to do is look at Steam now. Payday 2 free weekend and it's top of the Steam sellers. So, you know.
Yeah. I think the idea of 3 weekends is pretty great, because rarely is it that you play through a game on the whole weekend, and if it has some form of multiplayer, it's even less likely. So people can get like a really good shot of trying it out, and if it's on sale, like on, most of the time on Steam with these things, then I bet sales shoot up quite a bit.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, especially if you're a person who's played the game before, it helps you kind of bring you back to the fold, because you don't necessarily always have people. You know, it's one of the things we mentioned actually with Titanfall. It's like sometimes the community does dry up, but if you say there's a free weekend, oh, I'm going to try this out again, because it's going to be a lot of new people who are going to come play it, and it brings you back to that.
Yeah, and if people buy it, they will even stay there for longer probably, so you will have new people to play with. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so there you go. Which brings us to news, and it's been a very heavy GDC week, and the biggest announcement of the week obviously would have to be Project Morpheus, Sony's VR helmet for the PlayStation 4. Thoughts on this?
I don't like the idea of a platform-locked VR headset. I mean, I know why Sony's doing it. I don't like the idea of it, though. Because they're not cheap things, right?
And not really.
No, and not only that is, like, I'm a developer, right? What happens if the Oculus Rift works slightly differently to the Morpheus, and therefore I need to completely change how my game handles one or the other, you know? I mean, you can say that, okay, yeah, but you just, like, there's no competition then, and competition's good for the market. But I think that right now, I think the whole space is something that's unproven. We don't know if people want it. And already having, like, a platform-locked solution like this doesn't, I don't think it will bode well in the long term.
I would also say, and I don't want to say this as slander, but it's being platform locked by the one company who has proven that they are really nice to introduce stuff, but never necessarily support it properly. Just this past generation, we saw 3D, we saw Move. We've seen the PlayStation Eye, which has been around for 3 generations and still doesn't get much support from
them.
Well,
only now has it only gotten popular because of Twitch.
Yeah, and that's not even
the intentional use for it.
Well, I mean, I'm sure they use for it, but yeah, it's one of those things where, like, I mean, and granted, yes, it's not even coming out this year. They've said that much, but yeah, the fact that it doesn't seem like a lot of third parties. Well, we haven't heard from anybody. But I know Ubisoft is like, it has to sell like 1 million copies before we even consider it being something that we think of, and yeah, that I'm sure it's going to sell 1 million copies. I mean, you can find an audience for that, but. Like, does it sell 1 million copies right away? Does it sell 1 million copies after a year? Like, when does support come in for that if nobody's going to be there at launch because they want to see how it does first? Because I think Sony said they're aiming for $200-$250 for it on top of a $400 system, and you need the $50 camera. It adds up very quickly.
Yeah, but that's pretty much in line for these kind of things.
Well, then I think that's what he was saying, though, is that like, with the, at least if you got, like, Oculus Rift, it's not locked to your PC.
Oh yeah, of course, I totally agree with that part. I'm just saying that the price point seems about right for what it is, but I also think that having like a platform agnostic thing would be way better. I would have liked way more if Sony would have been like, okay, we support the Oculus Rift for our platform.
And this is the thing, is
it would have been better.
Most other things that Sony have done, like most other peripherals and just the ideas in general Sony have done, at least this generation, have been about platform agnosticism, because they said, you know, DS4 will work on PC out of the box, and it does, you know, and you can just plug any old hard drive in your PS4 like you can PS3, you know, and I think that platform agnosticism, even especially when it's something that's this expensive and this unproven, is the way to go, at least in the beginning. If people want it, that's when you start doing your own thing. And we don't know if people want it at the moment. I've seen a lot of people go, why do we need this? You know, why would I want this? I don't want this. You know?
I tried one. I know why I want it.
Yeah, I was the only thing I was gonna say to, and I'm not disagreeing with you guys necessarily, but everyone, I have never heard someone who has tried it and then said they didn't want it.
Well, again, I don't think you're gonna find people who don't want it. You're gonna have to find people who want to buy it at those prices. I mean, granted, at that time you might not think of it as a full investment because you already have a PS4 and you have the camera for streaming Twitch and stuff like that. And that is an audience, but I guess we'll also have to see what games are there, and what games are going to support it out of the gate. Because I mean, they already said Drive Club. I mean, granted, I don't know why people would assume Drive Club, because Drive Club's due this year, and the VR helmet's not due until next year would support it. But you know, that was one of the things people were fielding around about why Drive Club was delayed, and a racing game would make sense.
Yeah, it would. The only thing is another thing is that you have consoles which are, they're limited to the hardware that they were designed with initially. So let's say it takes off, right? You have to bear in mind that, as far as I'm aware, I'm not 100% sure on this, but as far as I'm aware, whatever machine you're doing the rendering on has to render almost the same thing twice, yeah. One for every eye. So,
the thing is, as far as I'm aware, the Morpheus does not have full 1080p. It's like,
yes, it does.
No, yeah, it's 1080 lines horizontally, but I don't think it's the full 1080p resolution vertically.
And I don't think Oculus Rift can do it either.
Oculus Rift 1080p version is full 1080p.
Yeah, the DK2 has just come out.
Is what, $300?
Yeah, is 1080p. And this is the thing: is on PC, obviously, you don't have to worry about that because if your computer can't handle it, you're whacking a graphics card in it, and there you go, problem solved. But
and again, that's kind of the thing with it being kind of open. Like, you don't necessarily know if this is going to be something that you can support with the PS5 and stuff like that. I mean, personally speaking, I'm not a huge fan of VR. I think it's a stupid avenue to, but that's just me. Partially, I hate wearing anything on my face once I already have something on my face because it's never comfortable. And this helmet just looks huge. Well, not helmet, glasses, I should say. But I assume it's a prototype and that will come down in a year or whatever.
I think it's supposed to become smaller.
Yeah. It's the same reason I hate 3D movies. It's just, there's never, it's, I mean, they said they're trying to make it comfortable for people who wear glasses. It's just really hard to always get an ideal view and angle when you have something over your face already.
I'm interested in the kind of push they made with Morpheus 2 or the emphasis, I should say, on 3D sound to go along with the VR experience, which, as far as I'm aware, isn't something that Oculus Rift.
Well, Oculus Rift has no sound at all. You have to use
right. Okay, yeah, that's what I thought. So that's an interesting little wrinkle in the Morpheus VR, because that just adds to if you're talking about something you're putting on your face and kind of immersing you in the whole experience, it makes a lot of sense that you'd want the sound to immerse you in the same way too.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, I think it's an interesting, and I mean, it is really the first exciting technology we've had in, I would say, probably since the Wiimote. I could be mistaken.
What, you don't like Kinect?
I would if Microsoft acted any more than they do. I mean, technically, they haven't released a Kinect game for the Xbox One, have they?
Let's say it like
Sports
this.
Rivals.
Let's say
that's
this
not
box.
Out yet, though.
Is it not? Do Tycoon.
Okay.
Let's say this about Kinect. I like the original vision of Kinect.
Yeah, the original idea. Like, I enjoy the idea of camera-based gaming. And I think, you know, this was the push Microsoft was making. It's weird. They made a better case with the Xbox 360 for Kinect with all those games than they did with the Xbox One that comes with Kinect because it has no games that use it yet.
Well,
it's a
weird system. Thing is, I think that, honestly, I think Kinect is junk for games. I think that it's a great... Like, if you're talking about human-computer interaction in general, then I think... Well, I mean, we've seen case studies that came out not long after the original Kinect did, where there were, like, surgeons using it to view medical records in surgery, and that's fucking cool. But video games, I think it's just a waste of time.
I don't think it's a waste of
but,
time.
VR, I can definitely see why, because I have used an Oculus Rift, so maybe I'm biased, but I can see why people would want VR. I'm not going to be jumping at the bit to get one myself, because if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of person. But I can see why VR would be a natural enhancement.
The only thing I have with VR as far as kind of market penetration is, unlike anything else we've seen in gaming in probably the last 20, 30 years, it seems to be a more isolated solo experience. Like, you can't show other people your VR while you're experiencing it.
I guess so.
You could show people, like, dancing with Kinect, or, you know, using the Wiimote for sports, or even, like, you know, great graphics you could show them on the TV, but VR is a very individual experience. And, yeah, you can pass the helmet around, but it's, you know, sometimes it's cool when somebody else sees you experiencing something and they come in and do this. Again, it's really going to depend on what Sony has as far as games go, and I guess that will be E3 for us, or part of E3 for us.
Yeah, I don't even know if it will be at E3. They showed it off at GDC for specific reasons, and I think the idea is just to get developers excited maybe and stuff like that, but before we see more of it, I think some time will go by.
I was also going to say, it's going to be an interesting thing how they showcase like games for that, because you can't really actually give everybody VR helmets at the press conferences. And stuff.
They could just do what they do with Oculus Rift, and they have a display that shows both outputs.
Okay. Yeah, it's like I said, it's just interesting as far as like it's the first major kind of new technology we've introduced in almost a decade.
Yep.
And VR itself is such a such a sci-fi concept.
It's kind of cool
to see it actually starting to be brought to life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, the thing is, early 90s VR was just plain garbage. I don't know if anyone got to try something like that.
Well, that's because everything in the 90s was garbage, if you look at it relatively.
But if you actually tried an Oculus Rift, like Gang of the Ass or me, I don't know if Jason, have you tried an Oculus?
No, I haven't. I wish. I want to.
It actually works as you wanted to, and I think that makes a big difference in why so many people that actually tried it or developed for it are so excited about it.
Well, I'm really waiting for the leapfrog when we get to higher grams and higher decks, because that's the sci-fi stuff I'm excited for.
I'm sorry that we are a bit more realistic than you are.
And something else that was exciting this week that came from GDC was the engine pricing war, is what I'm calling it anyhow.
I think this is the best thing to happen in a long time for video games developers.
It's awesome.
This is so good.
Yes, it is. It's amazing. And I guess before we react to it, we should tell people what it is. It came out, I believe this was like Tuesday or Wednesday, that Epic announced that Unreal Engine would have a new business model for indie titles on PC.
Technically everyone.
I thought they said pricing was different on the consoles because they had some type of arrangement.
Oh, okay, consoles, that might be the case, yeah.
Yeah. For $20, basically $20 a month and 5% of your royalties, they would allow you to license Unreal Engine 4 to make a game. No,
that's cheap.
That's amazing.
And then the best thing about this deal is if you stop paying because you can't afford it, you get to keep the access to the engine. You just can't get the updates. And as soon as
you don't get the updates, but
as soon as you stop paying again, you get the updates again. So,
yeah.
So
you can still publish with an older version and just pay the royalty.
Yeah.
I was gonna say technically though, couldn't that just mean you buy first month? That's
feasible.
You could do that, yeah.
Okay. And then, just to kind of dick around a bit, the next day, Crysis announced that CryEngine would be $9.90 a month. And this, I think this works because it's on all devices right now. You can use this for consoles as well.
That price is just crazy, but they also have to have some royalty deal going, I think. Right? I'm not aware of it, so...
They didn't say anything. They said no royalties in their release. I mean, granted, they haven't ironed out the details because this does seem kind of a reactionary, because they said they'll have more details in May when it's closer to launch. But
if it doesn't, that would be crazy.
Yeah, if it doesn't, I don't see how they can make any money from this. Like, royalties are a sensible thing. It's not like anyone would be like, oh, I'm not going to use this engine because I have to pay like 5%.
Even Unity has something going. Maybe Daniel, you...
I know Unity right now is kind of in a bad position because they charge $75 a month either that or you pay $1,500 in one go.
Yeah.
And you get access to it. But I don't think they take any royalties out of that.
Okay, so they skip the royalty thing, want more things. But the thing about the real royalties are, isn't it like they only kick in at a specific sale volume? I think if you sell like more than 100,000 copies?
That was the old UDK.
Okay, that was for old model. Okay.
Yeah, there was... you could publish for free, and the royalties wouldn't kick in until 50,000 sales, or $50,000, I think.
So now the royalties are always part.
Yeah, but I think they're lower.
Okay. No, it still seems fair. I just wasn't sure. That's why I wanted to ask.
Yeah,
still seems like a really good deal to me.
Oh, no matter how you cut it, this is
the great thing is this just means more people have access to these engines, right? Like,
it's gotten to the point where if you want to make video games, what the fuck are you doing sitting there? Go and make them. You pay Epic, $15, and you don't have to pay them ever again after that if you don't want to, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you do want to.
Well, once you start earning money, but, you know, that's fair game, you know? You got Unreal Engine, which, by the way, most games run on, you know? CryEngine, which is one of the best-looking engines out there, for $10 a month.
From what I've heard, quite easy to use.
Yeah, and if you need something that you want to learn on, then go and download Unity for nothing. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even if you don't want to make games, I think it would be a fun. I think they're just sticking around with the technology to see what happens. You never know. But yeah, it's just. It's, you know, like, the best ideas are sometimes the smallest, and now it's just much, much easier for these people to come up and develop these games if they have it. There's not that many hurdles anymore, and the great thing about a lot of these tools is not only does it allow you access to PC, but you can do mobile, you can do console, you can publish on a platforms now.
Yeah, and this is just amazing for indie developers. They now have more choices to pick the right engine for the game, or depending on price, whatever they can actually afford. And Unreal or CryEngine, like really, really high-tech engines being this cheap, also means for indie developers that they have like way better chances at like kind of keeping up with whatever AAA is doing, at least graphically on some level. I mean, they don't have, of course, millions of dollars to produce as many assets, but they can still do a lot of stuff that these games can do as well.
Yeah, I mean, granted, that's not where my focus would be. I mean,
no.
It's like less of an excuse to have a janky 8-bit sprite.
Yeah.
Yes. We've had that discussion before. Like, you can do better than that. But yeah, this is going to be exciting. I assume most of this won't bear fruit until... Actually, indie games can take a really short time to develop, so this might start bearing fruit by the end of the year.
Maybe.
The only problem I have with this, and this is kind of more the cynical stuff, is like this may open up the avenue the same way that mobile development does, and that everybody just kind of starts porting stuff, which means the crap-to-great ratio is just really huge at times, and unbearable other times.
This is a problem that pretty much any other medium has, and I think that, I mean, you don't really see that much truly badly put together music, and you don't really see that truly badly put together movies either. So,
well, you do. You just don't see it kind of on the same stage.
Yeah.
To YouTube and find anybody's indie film.
I think that, you're going to get a load more bad stuff, but people can only learn by making bad stuff. I've made nothing but bad stuff, you know?
Yeah. I'm just saying that it might, like, if you have, like, maybe, you know, like, if you get a week where 100 games come out and, like, two of them are worth seeing, you might miss those two because you have to go through the other 98. And somebody eventually has to.
like you said, you're not getting to be exposed on PSN to some guy who made an Unreal game in 2 months or something. That's highly unlikely that that's going to happen.
Consoles are a bit more, because, you know, Microsoft, Nintendo, and Sony all have some type of quality control.
Yeah.
Element, MFA. But, I mean, like, PC gaming and stuff. And well, granted, even Steam has...
This is a problem that Steam is going to have. It already has it, if you ask me. And the burden's on Valve. They've got to sort it, because right now there's no content curation going on, and it's going to get worse if they plan on turning Steam into a self-publishing platform like they keep telling us.
Yeah.
So they need to sort that out. And, I mean, that's not our fault. That's not a fault of Epic for making their engine cheap. It's a thing that's already happening. And it's a problem that already needs to be sorted, sadly.
Yeah, I mean, it's a problem, but it's not a game. Oh my gosh, there's too many games to play now.
No, they had that problem.
Speaking of engines, and this is a very bad segue, but whatever, Assassin's Creed Unity was announced.
<Yeah.
laughs> Hey, I was up front with this being a bad transition, okay?
Okay.
I will say this much. I enjoyed the fact that Ubisoft just decided to go with it, because this started off where the game was leaked with a few screenshots from Kotaku. And instead of kind of denying it or holding it off until they had their marketing ready, Ubisoft said, okay, you know what, this came out, we weren't ready for this, but here's a Alpha Troy.
This is a really yearly ritual at this point where the game gets leaked, so they just decide to announce it anyway a few days later.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess this is what happens when you have a team of 700 people that eventually somebody's going to say something or pass something along that they weren't supposed to.
Can we talk about, speaking of leaks, how basically this whole thing leaked on NeoGAF already? Before?
Well, that was the leak.
No. Way before. Like a month ago or something. Like this whole thing. There was a guy who talked... has a story about he met someone from Ubisoft on the plane.
I thought that one leaked like a Russian Assassin's Creed though.
What was it? I think it was French Revolution. I'm not sure now.
I don't know.
It's hard to keep track at this point of anything.
It's possible, but yeah.
But anyway, the game. What is it? It's based now in the during the French Revolution, something that a lot of people, including me, wanted from the series for a long time, because it's quite a cool scenario. And what else?
It's interesting that they're going kind of back to the like European metropolis type of game, when over the, you know, 3 and 4 they've kind of gone in away from that direction. When first you had the frontier in Assassin's Creed 3, and then obviously the, you know, pirate ships and everything in Assassin's Creed 4, and now it's back to here's a classic European city, lots of verticality. So I'm not dogging it at all. I'm just saying it's an interesting change in direction from the last two games to go kind of back to roots, so to speak.
The
French Revolution itself is definitely a really interesting time period, especially for an Assassin's Creed game.
Yeah, and apparently, I'll just link me what we said earlier, the NeoGAF leak was right, which is kind of interesting.
Somebody randomly told somebody on a plane about their next game.
The real funny thing is it's the second time that happened.
Ubisoft is going to stop having their developers fly, they're not going anywhere.
Anyway, it looks really nice. The few screenshots I saw and the trailer, it's a really good looking game. It's current gen only in PC, so that's really good, I think. And the main thing for me, though, is I got the scenario I really like. I think it looks nice, but one thing that has bothering me for like the last 2 or 3 Assassin's Creed games that I really need to address is they need to revamp the combat system. That's something we haven't heard yet about, and I really, really hope they do, because that system is really not that great anymore, and it's just too simple and too uninteresting. So I really hope they address that part of the game.
Well, it's the reason why I don't like the Assassin's Creed games anyway. Because I always didn't like the combat system, and they haven't changed it. So
this is separate, a bit more meta. As much as I hate it, I also understand now why developers and publishers go with CG trailers, because the initial reaction to the Assassin's Creed Unity leak with the screenshots was just unbearable, where people were talking about how terrible it looks and all this other stuff, which I assume was one of the reasons Ubisoft had to come up with this trailer anyhow.
Because I saw those screenshots and thought it looked really good.
There were a lot of people complaining that you know, it looks dusty, it wasn't very detailed. Granted, these are extremely tiny screenshots. But yeah. And now that they did the CG trailer, it's kind of everybody's back on board, even though Ubisoft was one of the people they were complaining about who always show these bullshot trailers that don't necessarily reflect the final product.
Yeah, well, this is video games community, and they don't know they don't know what they want, do they? So.
Yes. Just to kind of break it up and not go in order, I thought this was a very interesting idea announcement, but it really went under the radar this week, was WB Game Vault, which is...
What is this?
The thing is how it was kind of not announced. I mean, they announced the new Gauntlet made by Arrowhead, and in the press release it said, like, the first game from the WB Vault, which aim it is to... bring back old IPs or interesting new concepts to downloadable platforms. I think that was kind of what it said, right?
Yeah, the game will either launch a WB Games Vault, a direct-to-digital portfolio that will deliver paid games based on popular Warner Brothers and Midway brands, plus original IPs across multiple digital networks. So
yeah.
It's basically...
So it basically means...
WB's realizing that not every game can be AAA, and there's a digital platform so that's basically where they're going to put the effort for mid-tier games. Like, if you want a new, it's War Guards, which is extremely obscure midway IP, there's a chance that it can come to like PSN and Xbox Live and eShop and Steam. Or if you want like a new, I think Rampage is an IP that Midway owned as well.
So this is like remakes of games and
not remakes. But basically, that they have a bunch of IPs. They bought Midway when that went up, and they have a bunch of Warner Brothers. You know, you have characters in DC who probably aren't Batman who can sustain a $60 game. So instead of trying to shoehorn them into $60 games, they're gonna like, oh, we'll just do $15 digital downloads.
Okay. Right,
so it's basically them embracing digital by saying that we have a bunch of brands that we can use and we have a bunch of ideas.
Like, they make things on the scale of kind of like Double Fine's recent games.
Yeah.
Right, cool. Okay.
Yeah, and the first one is Gauntlet. I mean, Gauntlet is a very old IP, but they picked a really good studio, I think, with Arrowhead. I mean, it's the Magicka guys. So
yeah, I'm so excited for this.
As a co-op game, that's really cool from them, I think. I heard people played it at GDC and quite liked it. So that's interesting. And WB have said before, like, regarding the Batman title stuff, I mean... the last one kind of fell out of it, but they talked about how they want to use IPs and licenses, but for quality games. So that's kind of interesting to me, if they really want to leverage the old Midway stuff and basically breathe new life into, I don't know, if they breathe new life into Rampage, that could be really exciting.
Yeah.
Especially if they go for developers like Arrowhead, if they go to, like, really interesting indie developers and say, hey, pick whatever IP you like and make a game for us. That would be really cool.
Yeah, and, you know, they have new ideas. And again, you know, they can focus, because they have big retail brands. They have Batman, they have Injustice, they have Mortal Kombat. They have, you know, a lot of different major brands, so they can still have that. But I think this is kind of the movie mentality now, where you have like this huge tentpole game, and this year would be Arkham Knight, and then you have a bunch of little games around it that don't cost as much, and you probably don't expect to make as much, but you can support it with your big title that comes out and does really well at retail. And I think this is something that a lot of third parties need to get. actually, I think most companies need to get, because it's a great avenue. And there are certain brands that really, I wouldn't buy a new Rampage game for $60 because that game has never had that type of depth that needed for a full game. But for like a $10 digital game, sure, why not? A new Cruisin'?
Oh yeah, a new Cruisin', that would be cool.
So, yeah, there's a ton of IPs that they picked up from Midway. And not, you know, some of them, like NBA Jam went to EA and stuff like that, and some of them have been divided up, but yeah, you know, there's a ton of stuff. And again, Warner Brothers, like, there's been hints of a Suicide Squad game that could be digital. Like, I wouldn't mind if it was a retail title, but how many people know the Suicide Squad to buy a Suicide Squad game?
Yep.
Maybe they can go back to, like, the Mortal Kombat action games, Shaolin Monks 2.
Oh, Shaolin Monks, oh, yes.
Yeah, that would be the perfect avenue for new Shaolin Monks. Yeah,
yeah,
totally.
So yeah, but like I said, I think it's a great idea. And it was nice of them to kind of announce it, like Martin said, kind of stealthy through the announcement of an actual game. Because it's different if you kind of announce a service and it's like, oh yeah, we're gonna do this thing, but whatever. It's like, oh, we have a game and this is gonna be part of this movement now.
Yep. Because it already kind of gives you an idea of where they will be going with this.
Exactly, okay. And you see the quality of the game. Like, it's not going to be cheap mobile games. It's going to be actual games that live up to the legacies, hopefully of the legacies of these companies and these IPs. Yes. The other two, this one, there's been a bunch of departures, but this one was the big one. Konami.
Yeah. Igarashi.
Igarashi, but for some reason everybody just says Iga.
Yeah, it's a short handle.
Yeah,
Igarashi is his full name.
But the one of the masterminds between the Castlevania, let's say revival since Symphony of the Night, up until, I want to say he didn't have as much to do with Lords of Shadow.
He doesn't have anything to do with Lords
of
Shadow. At that point, I think Konami relegated him to doing Facebook games.
Oh, fancy. Then I wonder why he stuck around so long.
Oh, yeah. I'm actually as well surprised, but I think that's kind of a Japanese attitude in that way. But
I also wonder if the success of like Japanese developers kind of branching out to like indie games like with Mighty No. 9 and Gunvolt had helped him with that, where it's like, oh, I can continue making what I love in this Moya Avenue if I can just put together a team. But
it sounds like that's a huge part of it. I mean, it seems like he's might be looking at Kickstarter and stuff like that. And there was an interview or something where it also sounded like... No, what he said was like that Konami no longer lets me make the games I want to do. And that's why I left. So it always sounds like, yeah, he's totally going to make a new Metroidvania.
Yeah. Yeah, which he gave an entire speech on at GDC.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he also hinted that he would be interested in making a Metroid game, which...
It's the same Nintendo, isn't it?
Huh?
Yeah.
It's just the same Nintendo is not interested in making a new Metroid game, isn't it?
I will say this much. I always find the Metroid stuff really weird because it's only been 3.5 years, which I know seems like forever in a video game, but games come out every 2 years. It's like, why is it so many sequels?
You take a break. Kidding,
why? I know. It's a lot of people who react that. There's one guy on my Twitter who just drives me nuts. Everything somehow relates to Metroid being dead. Every single conversation. It's just annoying as hell. But that's a tangent. But yeah, I think it's interesting, especially being that I think there was a Verge article that came out this week that a lot of like Japanese indie development hasn't really kept up pace with the Western counterparts yet. And I think part of it was because they had such huge structures with these publishers and these companies. I mean, because, you know, like, especially last gen, with Nintendo being a predominant console publisher in Japan, they're in the... digital side was kind of, very weak. non-existent on the DS, which was the biggest console of the DS generation over there. So it makes sense that now that everything's kind of catching up, like eShop's there, PlayStation Network's there, you know, they're getting into PC gaming now. I can see a lot of them kind of going and doing that stuff when, you know, the big publishers are interested in those brands that sell well. Even then, everything's kind of getting the Western fair. It's like a lot of Japanese developers aren't as, like, you know, the last two Castlevanias were done by Western teams. Resident Evil's done by a Western team and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what actually does pan out over the next year or two with Japan in the development team.
And it's especially interesting that so many of these, let's say, more prolific Japanese developers are leaving the big publishers. I mean, it was Kijina Funi is out, Igarashi is out.
The dude behind Sonic was gone for a while.
Mikami, technically, Shinji Mikami, technically, also left Capcom, although he now, again, is with a bigger publisher, but I don't think Bethesda owns them.
Well, even still, Bethesda seems to be more willing to put money into things that are risky. I mean, see Dishonored, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, it's nice when you have a couple blockbuster franchises in Elder Scrolls and Far Cry to kind of fund.
Fallout, you mean?
Mid-tier, or Fallout, sorry, not Far Cry, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting time. And, I mean, if they have anywhere near the success of something like Platinum Games, which is a spinoff of Capcom's former employees, more power to them.
Yeah.
And finally, and this is slightly video game related, and that Sony is also starting up their own kind of individual network, like Microsoft announced at E3 last year with the Halo TV series, which we've heard nothing about since then, unless I'm mistaken.
No.
Well, Sony did announce that they were going to do original programming. This is just the first we've actually heard about what projects it would be.
Yes.
I actually missed this completely, so clue me in.
So they announced that they are doing a Powers TV show. Powers, if you don't know, is a comic book series by Brian Michael Bendis. I believe it's Bendis.
Yeah.
It's basically a cop show with the idea of they exist in the world of superheroes, and this is a division that deals with superheroes and supervillain crimes and stuff like that. One of the cops is a former superhero who has super strength, and the other one's just a normal detective, and just kind of dealing with that. If you've ever read Gotham Central, it's kind of like that.
I know Powers. I was just interested in what the projects would be.
Oh, this is the only one they announced so far.
Okay.
And Powers.
Oh, yeah. It's just, it's like Sony Pictures is just making or producing a few series that are going to be exclusive to PlayStation Network.
Yeah.
Kind of similar to the way that Microsoft has their TV studio now that's doing, like Earl said, the Halo show and whatever else that they haven't talked about yet.
And, of course, Netflix with their original programming.
Yeah. I'm quite interested in Powers, let me ask one more question. Do we know if Bendis is involved with it?
I believe he, because this project has been floating around Hollywood for the past, I want to say, 3 or 4 years. I know at one point it was supposed to be an AMC show, and I think this is around the time The Walking Dead started, and I don't really know what happened there. But yeah, I believe he was involved with it. I don't really know. They haven't said much since then.
Okay.
But, I mean, the latest announcement was just that it's going to happen. I think it's a limited series. I think it's like 10 episodes or something like that for the season.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, I'm also kind of curious how Sony's going to do it. If it's going to be kind of a weekly show, if they're going to do the Netflix model where you just kind of dump everything at once and make people watch it as is.
It would also be interesting to see how they monetize it as well. Do they charge you for the series or per episode or just stick it in PS Plus or...
Well, that's a good idea. Is it going to be a part of your PlayStation Plus account, like Amazon Instant Video?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would definitely be a great value add to
as if it doesn't really need any more value add.
Yeah, that's probably true.
If I'll take them, if you know.
I mean, to be fair, we don't know how Microsoft's going to monetize theirs either.
Yeah, that's very true.
Because, I mean, I could see that adding value to Xbox Live because it needs it.
Yeah.
By not hiding stuff behind Xbox Live Gold, like Twitter and Facebook and SFM, stuff that's already free elsewhere. But, yeah, I'm super excited. Powers is one of my absolute favorite comic books. If you haven't read it, I would recommend it. And if you haven't read that either, I would also recommend Gotham Central, which is what influenced Powers, I believe. Yeah. I have crime shows in superhero worlds, what can I say?
It's kind of an interesting proposition, so I don't blame you.
Yeah, it's extremely... And even though those are really the two big ones, there aren't many other comic books that are set in these type of worlds. And there's no TV shows up until Gotham this far, I guess, that are set in it either. And police procedurals are really easy shows to do, apparently, because everybody does like 50 of them. So yeah, I guess there's anything else that you folks want to touch on. Just really quickly, we're not going to touch on people, even companies. It happens way too often, and like, what are we going to say? They ask the company, oh man, this must mean something.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have no clue.
I don't know, we said that with Iga, but that was completely different because he's already expressed interest in doing other projects, and he has for a specific reason. Like, the guy, Stig, even Sony Santa Monica, after his project gets canceled, makes sense.
Yeah.
But that's it. I mean, that's all we know. So, next week should be another quiet week. I expect the week after may be not as quiet because I think that's when people's financial year starts ending, and I think that's when we'll hear more about people being laid off, which is never good, but it's usually around this time.
We are already getting nominees for company being closed for delivering a good game.
We always do. Actually, there aren't a ton of... Well, I'm not going to say that. I was going to say there aren't a ton of great games this year. I don't think the Titanfall team's going to close down. I don't think Infamous team's going to close down. I know Retro's not going to close down.
Well, there. Speaking of Titanfall, there have been some reports this week that EA has officially signed the sequel, and it will be multi-platform.
Yeah, I think that was pretty...
surprising at all.
No, that pretty much lines up with what everyone was saying prior. Yeah.
I mean, that's literally what the contract said. Yeah. But the fact that people... I have always found this fascinating about game news. It's like, we have these things that come out, and it gets confirmed that people act like it's new news that we didn't hear 2 years ago when this exact contract was leaked by them.
No, the difference here is that people thought, like, because Microsoft bought for some reason the exclusivity of the first game, it will, of course, stay exclusive forever. No, that's not the case.
No, but that's literally what the contract said, is that Microsoft had exclusive rights to the first game, and then the second game...
The first contract was exclusivity for a limited time.
Yeah. Oh,
That changed.
I mean, cause that's the same thing that happened with Mass Effect, in that it was exclusive for a while, and once that
finished. Yeah, of course.
Well, that was also a little different in that Microsoft actually published the first Mass Effect.
Yeah, but then they got bought by EA, so of course it makes sense that EA probably ponied up some money to release the games however they please.
Yeah.
And it just makes sense with Titanfall being with EA that they would like this very much to be a multi-platform title, and they probably just went for the exclusivity because Microsoft offered them an absurd amount of money
that they thought maybe we can't make that much at the beginning of the generation. It makes a lot of sense to have the...
Well, I mean,
to have a platform holder, because then that's essentially you're guaranteeing those sales, especially with a new IP on new platforms. There's a lot more risk than normal.
I was also going to say though, but the original contract, the original deal was because they assumed that this game was coming on the 360, and at the time that makes a lot more sense, in that the 360 was the console you went to for shooters. I don't know when they switched over to it being a multi-generational title. But I also imagine that would have something to do with the decision, is that they probably won't be a 360 version in that go around.
No.
Oh, I certainly hope not. I mean, we still haven't seen the 360
version. Oh, yeah, we didn't mention the fact that the 360 version was actually delayed another 2 weeks.
That game is dead on arrival now.
Oh,
I'm sorry, that game is going to be so horrible on 360, it's ridiculous.
It's probably going to look terrible.
Well, I mean, it's not like Titanfall is a great Yoko to begin with.
No, but...
but there's just so much going on.
Even worse.
Yeah, I think it's going to be more.
Let's remember the 360 has 512 megabytes of RAM. It's a very old and limited machine. Especially for how much is going on in any given match in that game.
Hey, I'm still holding out hope so I don't have to pay $450 for a system, okay?
You don't have to. No one is forcing you.
I want to play Titanfall. I mean, it looks really fun. I have giant mechas.
Wait for Titanfall 2.
You should play Infamous.
Exactly.
We'll discuss this off air. anyhow, for Daniel, Jason, Martin, and myself, this has been New World in episode 134. Thank you.